Welcome to Just Tick with Liz and Laws. In this podcast, we embrace and discuss the philosophy, art, and science of the chiropractic world.
Hey, Laws.
Hey, Liz.
Are you ready to talk some tick?
I'm so excited to talk some tick, Liz.
So, guys, we're in Amsterdam, and we have the amazing honor to interview Dr. Sarah Ferrand today. Hey, Sarah.
Hello, good morning to you ladies.
Sarah Ferrand is a chiropractor that lives in New Zealand. She educates people about health coming from vitalistic health, coming from the inside out. And her book, The Vital Truth, is a very important book for everyone to read, but has also won the Nonfiction Writer of the Year book. And she's has a new book coming out called The Health Illusion. So we are very excited to talk to you about inside-out, vitalistic, chiropractic and health today, Sarah.
Fantastic.
Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to sharing with yourself and your listeners.
I have a poignant question to ask, Sarah, and my question is, what is the vital truth?
What is the vital truth? Well, it's based on the principle of vitalism. And of course, you ladies would have heard that around the chiropractic profession for many years. And it's based on, it's a book based on how we, I guess, how, in a nutshell, how we view health. So do we view health from a mechanistic perspective or do we view health from a vitalistic perspective? And what I mean by a vitalistic perspective, and I must say over the years, Lauren and Liz, my definition and my understanding of vitalism and vitalistic principles has certainly evolved more than when I first wrote that book, which was back in, 2004, I started writing that. So 13 years ago, I started writing that, but it was back in the late 90s. It was about 1998 that I actually started looking into the idea of the vitalistic understanding and health and where it comes from. So the book certainly has that genre to it in terms of health and where it comes from a chiropractic perspective. But it also has, if you really pick out some of the pieces and you see the unspoken words, I guess, within the book, it really has to do with the major principle of vitalism, which is that there are these unforeseen and invisible forces that really surround us and help to shape and guide our physical reality. So there's about 13 or 14 different stories in that book that are speaking to that particular principle of vitalism. And I'm really proud of that book. You know, when it came out in 2000, I started writing it in 2004, finished it in 2006, and it's now sold in over 34 countries around the world. I'm really proud of what it's contributed to the chiropractic profession.
And yeah, if you have to condense down, not just in the book, because you've said you've progressed a lot as well, is what right now to you is the one thing that people need to know, or that is the truth to you?
About vitalism.
There are these unforeseen and invisible forces that surround us and help to shape and guide our physical reality. And really when we look at the definition of vitalism from that perspective, it just provides a whole, rather than taking a 1,000-foot view of what health is, it actually catapults it to a 10,000-foot view to see how the way in which we approach our health, the way in which we create health circumstances in our life, helps to really guide our pathway through our life. And that, to me, has an impact on the evolution of ourselves as species. I'll give you this example. When I was at Palmer College, and it was the late 1990s, and I think I was in maybe fourth trimester or fifth trimester. It could even be sixth trimester. Anyway, we were doing this big philosophy colloquium at the college, and I was invited to sit on the stage as a philosopher, because I love philosophy as I was going through school, to sit on the stage with, I think there was two other students, and Fred Barge, Victor Strang, David Koch, and Reggie Gold, and interview them. Now, this is at the Lyceum Auditorium. I don't know if you ladies have been to the Palmer Lyceum at all, or they call it Homecoming. But there's a big hall called Lyceum Hall, and it has it holds about 400 people. And so there's 400 people sitting in this auditorium. I'm sitting on this stage with these four greats that have that contributed to our philosophy over the years, and the picture of who we are from within and to the public. So I'm sitting there, and before we went on, I'd said to the people who were running it, I said, can I ask my own questions? And they said, no, these are the questions that you have to ask. Please don't go off script. And I was like, oh, you know, there's something really bugging in me that I really wanted to ask. So I sat there and I went through all the questions, and they were answering them. And then I thought, you know what, I've just got to ask this question. I've just got to put it out there just to see what the response would be. So I said to all four of them, I asked them, I said, so do we have a space within our philosophy, or do you have an understanding within yourself that perhaps the subluxation is contributing to the evolution of the human species and of mankind? Wow. Yeah. The auditorium, if they were allowed food in the auditorium, they would have thrown it at me. How do you think, why do you think that the subluxation is good for the body, and how could that be, and we get sick people well, and, you know, yada, yada, yada. I got bombarded afterwards. But interestingly, the four guys sitting on the stage, Victor, Fred, Reggie, and David, they all sat poised thinking about it.
Yeah,
and it was Fred Barge that actually said to Reggie and the other, and Victor and David, do you know what? I think there needs to be some timely deaths for the evolution of the profession. And that to me was like, yes, perhaps he actually does have the same, you know, view of what the subluxation actually contributes to for the human being themselves and for our species as a whole. So I was wrapped with that, but afterwards, you know, I got bombarded. So I've never stopped thinking in terms of my truth, to answer your question of what my vital truth is, the truth that what we create in our body is a contribution to how we are doing our life. But if we only take a 1,000-foot view, we're not going to see that, and we think that it's all that health is always linear, and that we've got death at one side and we've got health at the other, and we have to be heading towards the health side, because if we're not, that means we're sick, and that's not a good thing. Whereas I'm like, no, health actually exists on a spectrum where we have, yes, we have death and health at lineal ends, but we also have the plethora in the middle. So, you know, if we go on a hierarchy, if we go from an optimal health to good health to mere health to dis-ease to disease to death, then that's a lineal path, yes, but within that we have oscillations all over the place every nanosecond for the whole of our physical existence. So that brings a whole nother conversation to why we create certain things in our life, be it physically, chemically, or emotionally, across the different seven areas of life, and how that can be of contribution to our life rather than a hindrance to our life.
So what you're saying then is that we're creating subluxation so that we can further evolve individually, and the human species as a whole are creating subluxation so the human species as a group collective form can also evolve.
Is that kind of absolutely. What
you're saying?
Yes, absolutely.
And how would you explain that if you can?
Okay. So for instance, if we look at ourselves, it's a shame it's not a visual podcast, right? So let me see if I can explain it so your listeners will be able to understand it from a you know, a self-visual perspective. Mm-hmm. So if we have an intact body, then we have free-flowing innate intelligence through our system, and everything is functioning well. When we create a subluxation in our body, and you'll notice that I use that term very deliberately, that we create it. It doesn't happen to us, which is very mechanistic in its language. I happen to, you know, have a subluxations, or you have subluxations. It's I created these subluxations for a reason. So we create these subluxations via the physical, the chemical, and the emotional, and also through our perceptual thoughts. So our perceptual thoughts see different circumstances, whatever that may be, and those circumstances then alter the physiology of our body. The physiology of our body is altered so much so that our mind and our body separate. That then becomes the creation of a subluxation. So it doesn't have to be the mind, it can be vertebrae, but whatever it is, there's a disturbance to our nerve system. Then through the art of the adjustment, that the adjustment, and when we get into etymology as well, Lauren and Liz, and we look at the breakdown of the words, that's when it starts to become fascinating. So etymology is a love of mine, and looking at the Latin derivative of words. So treat means to deal with, and ment means mind. So a treatment in an allopathic approach to health, when you go to someone to get something, to take something away, and you're provided a treatment, then they're only dealing with your mind. So we create those illusions that say that it's not there anymore. And you, or, you know, most people that are have been in the allopathic approach know the you know, the beat of that drum, you know, when it's not there anymore because we've taken a medication, we've altered neurons within that brain that say that it's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. And then in the chiropractic profession, we're very adept, aren't we, at understanding the subluxation is a condition of less than light. But when I ask people, well, what does adjustment mean? And adjustment means, ad means move to, just means center, and ment means mind. We move the mind back to center. So in our perceptual thoughts, when we see circumstances physically, chemically, or emotionally, we alter our physiology. That then creates a discord or a disturbance or a disassociation between our mind and our body. We don't have those free-flowing neurons or nerves anymore. Therefore, our function is diminished. The art of the adjustment then provides an opportunity for the mind to move back to center. When the mind moves back to center, we can then see it for what it is. And then we are able to make decisions that bring about change in our life. So, for example, and this is probably more of a tangible example, let's just say that you are at home in your own world. Let's say you're in Amsterdam, right? Mm-hmm. So you're there in Amsterdam, and then all this stuff, you've got friends in your life that may be complaining about something, you've got family members that are hounding about something, life at work as an associate or business owners may not be going so well, and you decide to take a holiday. So you decide, let's say, Liz, you go back to South Africa, Lauren, you go to Australia, you're there in your own worlds, you're having different experience back home in Australia, time with friends, time with family, and you've taken what I call distance. You've taken distance from what's happening in Amsterdam. And then when you've finished your holiday in Australia, you then go back to Amsterdam and people are still doing the same thing. But because you've had a different experience, you walk back into those situations with your friends or as an associate or business owner, whatever it is, and you have new light, you have new understanding, and perhaps the things that were triggering you before you left and went away are not the same when you've returned. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes. So in that case, our trip would be an adjustment in some form.
Well, your trip would be the perception that something has, you know, taken place in your life, and that's the distance. That creates the discord between the mind and the body. So that creates – when you've gone from Amsterdam to Australia, that's the subluxation.
Okay.
So now you've removed yourself from the area which is challenging. You're then taking the time out to see it for what it is, and then you are returning to it with a whole different understanding and shedding new light on the situation. And that's where we have the condition of less than light. We're not shining the light there anymore based on that circumstance in Amsterdam. We're now shedding light over here in Australia. And when you go back, we have a luxation, so we have a condition of light again.
Yeah. So it does also, it's the subluxation and the adjustment, and now you have light again.
Yeah, so coming back with the new frame of thinking is you've got that new light.
Totally, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's, I think, what you feel, I think someone once explained is when someone goes through a divorce and then they will be subluxated from the stress of the divorce, and then they go out and they go partying and drinking and eating bad food, and it's like they disconnect themselves more and more and more and subluxate themselves more so they don't feel so much. And then when the time is right and they can feel again, then they can come back to harmony. And then
last... Well, and the same is true, Liz, for somebody who has stayed in a relationship and created the subluxations within the relationship, and then they get out of the relationship and no longer do they carry that or beat that same drum. Does that make sense? So it works both ways.
Yeah,
that's very true, because it's often obviously not the goal of an adjustment, but sometimes what can happen is people become less and less subluxated or adjusted more and more under care for longer, I should say. Their marriages may change, or they may change job, or they may have life-changing experiences, I suppose, exactly what you're saying, because of the light change.
Yeah. Mm. Well, and when you look at the definition of health, I mean, there's definitions of health, but if we look at, and we all know what those definitions are, but if we look at the etymology of the word health, it actually means wholeness.
Okay.
When you look at the root meaning of the word, means wholeness. So if we truly are healthcare professionals, and wholeness means positive and negative, because you can't have a positive without a negative and a negative without a positive, can you?
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're living an illusion that life is all about the positive and we never go to the negative, or life is all about the negative and we never go to the positive. And that's not true. In health, we have a positive and we have a negative. That creates the whole. So in health, when we're looking at the creation of these subluxations that people have for the evolution of their own life, then there's going to be good and there's going to be bad. But that's not necessarily bad and that's not necessarily good, if you follow what I mean by that, is that the danger that we get into is that when we think that health is a lineal pathway, i.e., go to the chiropractor, remove, again, a mechanistic word, remove the subluxation. We're removing those subluxations so that you can turn on the light and live a different way. Well, what happens, and this happens more often than not, that people can also get adjusted and their life suddenly unwinds and spirals in a direction that they weren't thinking.
Mm.
And so the question is that bad? And I'm saying, no, that's not. That's actually vitally important for them to go through that process in order to come out the other side.
Yeah. So how does that fit in with kind of adjusting someone twice a week for a certain amount of time, or, you know, caring for them in that way? Are you bringing light into the situation again and again, or are they falling back in old patterns, or refining the same subluxation pattern? How does that work in your mind?
I think that all goes, again, that goes back to what we think the subluxation is and really what we think the adjustment is. Like, I'm not adjusting people's patterns necessarily, but what I am doing is providing for them as a facilitator to help them change. So the word change and the word difference are two of the most used, most common words in our practice. And one of the things after an adjustment that we say to people is notice the change. We always say go for a walk. It's a cerebellum reset is what we call it. And we just say to them, notice the change. Now, I'm not attached one iota to whether that change is good or whether that change is bad. I'm just saying to them, notice the change. So I'm not saying, what's going to happen if, your symptoms get worse or something like that. That's not my language. But my language is very clear on notice the change, notice the difference. So I want them to then be able to come back and report on the changes and the difference without a it got better or it got worse scenario, if you know what I mean. I'm just wanting them to notice the change.
Yeah. So, Sarah, how do you go about educating or empowering people in this way? Is it like a continual drip of empowering words like what you've just mentioned? Or do you have like classes or workshops to do this, or encourage people to read your books? How do you educate people from an empowering point of view to think this way and to believe, to change paradigms?
A lot of it, Lauren, comes from years of experience. You know, I've had 30 years in the healthcare industry, so I've seen things come and go, and one of my expertise is to see gaps in industries and systemize things. So finding out where they're at. And I know it's kind of cliche to say, you know, meet them where they're at. I'm not so much like that as I am with really listening to the language that they're using and listening to the language that they're using. And by the way, I haven't done any NLP or anything like that. That's not where I am. But I'm listening to the language that is either passive in orientation or self-responsibility in orientation. So are they using things like, oh, this happened to me, it wasn't very nice, things like that that have me think that they're in either a victim pattern or life's happening to them, that they've got no control over their life, that there's no self-responsibility, versus I'm looking for the people that are using, you know, I'm looking forward to this changing, I want to change, people who use the word like difference, people who are understand that, you know, they are the, you know, the captain of their ship and the master of their destiny, essentially, that they do have the self-responsibility and the want to change. So it's in the language that they're using, to answer your question, mm-hmm. Which would help drive me to then more than likely what you said, drip feed, for want of a word, drip feed through the education. But my books, of course, I mean, The Health Illusion itself is a very simple read. I've spent given a lot more of my own personal journey in the front end of that book, and then looked at how I took the world's health information and really put it into bite-sized pieces so people can understand it. So that's a really good starting point for the general public.
Yeah, okay, great. It's a pretty powerful title, actually, that you've got. The Health Illusion, Is It Killing You?
Yeah, it's a good one to make ruffles, isn't it?
Yes.
That's why it's done that way, yeah, it's great.
So when would you say a person is healthy?
Well, it's not about putting a peg in the sand and delineating that, is it? Because we're ever changing every nanosecond of our life for the whole of our physical existence. But you're healthy when you can see your situation as whole.
Yeah.
So when you see the good in the bad and the bad in the good, when you see it for what it actually is, then you're truly sitting in a health, in a healthy approach to your life. But when you're not, and you're seeing it as bad, and this shouldn't be there, and all those shoulds and oughts and coulds, which is really according to somebody else's life, then we lay judgments on that, and the person doesn't have the opportunity for self-responsibility to therefore help change the way they do their life.
Yeah.
So, and the more that you can take that to a 10,000 foot view and see how the subluxations we create within our life, within ourself, and it's not just within ourself. There are subluxations in families, in businesses, you know, they're everywhere if we want to broaden that term. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, suffice to say that when you take a 10,000-foot view, you really see how these unforeseen and invisible forces are really helping to shape and guide our physical existence. And that's powerful when you start to see that.
Yeah,
it is incredible. I have an example, maybe not of a subluxation, but a couple of weeks ago I had a cold and I thought, well, that's cold and it's, I guess, what's supposed to happen. I wasn't run down or anything, and the cold went over, and then I noticed immediately that I've started doing CrossFit, and I was struggling with some of the weightlifting. It was like overnight I was stronger and I had more energy and I felt better in my body. It's like my body just needed that cold to kind of reset myself, and I thought, wow, that's pretty clever.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've raised our kids. They're now 10, 12 and 14, you know, in this particular self-responsibility approach, vitalistic principles for the whole of their life. And you know, they've never had a drug, they've never been to medical doctor, you know, no over-the-counter drugs, no prescription and no scheduled, i.e. vaccinations. So we've sat very comfortably in this particular approach to health. And I've always said to the kids, you know, whenever they create something, the question is, or I'll give you an example, and you ladies might remember it from the Edinburgh lectures when you heard me speak, but it had to do with Annam, our younger boy, our eldest boy, when he was 5 and he was laying in bed. He created what I call a health expression because we wanted specific terminology when we raised our kids to be able to sit in this particular health approach. So rather than sickness, back in the year 2000, I think actually it was 99 when I was first pregnant with twins that we then lost, that I had created the word health expression, and that's what I wanted. And I'm really proud that that word is now used, you know, around the world in the chiropractic profession, which is awesome. But he was in bed and he created a health expression. So I went up to him and I said, put my hand on his forearm and I said, Annam, it's mummy here. What's going on? And he goes, I don't know. I don't know. And I said, yes, you do. What's going on? He said, I don't know. I said, yes, you do. Is it physical, chemical, or no? He paused and he said, well, clearly I created a health expression. And I said, good job, buddy. What's your health expression about? I don't know. I don't know. Yes, you do. What's it about? Physical, chemical, or emotional? And he paused and he said, mummy, I think it's about the physical. And I said, well, do you think or do you know? And he said, well, I know. And I said, great, okay, so health expression, physical body, what's the physical part about? And then he paused, and he paused for quite what seemed to be a long pregnant pause. And he said, you know the skate park you take us to, because we home educate our kids. I don't know if you knew that, but so I take them out to this skate park in the afternoon. And he said, the middle ramp, I'm not able to get down. This is going to help me grow in my strength, and I'm going to be able to get down the skate ramp. And I said, good job, buddy. And I adjusted him and he went to sleep. And 2 days later, he was down the ramp. So
yeah.
Whenever a health expression is done with and doing what it needs to do, then post 10 days, the breaking of a fever or the completion of a health expression, you will see major change. And that doesn't matter if it's an adult or it doesn't matter if it's a child. If it's a child, you'll see the change more readily because there's more change to undertake. So they choose different foods, there's dexterity, there's coordination, there's vocabulary, there's friends that change, there's beliefs that change. There's a ton of change that you can see in a kid. Sometimes as adults, we don't always see that change because we always think about our physical body, but we forget that there's the chemical and there's the emotional changes that are taking place as well. So that gives you an example of what you were saying then, Liz, about, you know, we create these colds and then there's the opportunity post 10 days after that cold has completed its cycle within the body, that then we have the opportunity to create the greatest change.
Sarah, what about those kids that are constantly sick having a health expression in any form? They just don't seem to be able to, I suppose, process that or overcome that. I'm very careful with my words now. and what do you think is going on then?
Well, again, if we take the 1,000-foot view, we're only going to look at the child, aren't we?
Yeah.
We're only going to go, okay, well, was the child vaccinated? What do they eat? You know, because peanuts are in vaccinations, eggs are in vaccinations. So is it allergies that they have? You know, did they recently change schools, you know, et cetera. So if we take the 1,000-foot view, we're only going to see the child.
Yeah.
But if we take the 10,000-foot view, then we're going to see the whole family nucleus. And so what I do in working closely with families, be that privately and in different parts of the world, they're not necessarily in the practice and I'm not necessarily adjusting them. When you look at the family dynamic, then you can look physically, chemically, and emotionally. So I've always said, and I will say it to the day that I die, that what gets suppressed within a family gets expressed. And the child that most resembles the parent at the time with what they're suppressing is the one that will show up. So the more kids that you have, the more opportunities you have for growth. The less kids you have, the less opportunity you have for growth. If you follow that thought, as in we have lots of different, you know, you've got more kids, more opportunity, because there's more projection, I guess, coming back at you. So, for instance, if there's a child that's always, you know, sick and they've always got a cough, then you really need to understand the dynamic of the parents as well and what's getting suppressed. So what aren't the parents owning, either within their own chosen path in life or between each other or between themselves and the children? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. But do you embrace that? Do you have that conversation with the parents?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because it's important, you know, otherwise it's, you know, otherwise we're constantly really, Dee Dee Palmer said the way in which subluxations are created in the body are physically, chemically and emotionally, or the other way that I wrote a whole chapter on it in The Vital Truth is the three T's, thoughts, trauma and toxins.
Yeah.
So if we are only looking at the physical aspect of a human being when they come into the practice, I feel from the founder of the chiropractic profession's perspective, we would be doing a disservice. It's like the tripod with two legs missing.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't we want to understand the chemical understanding of the body from a biochemistry perspective? And I'm not a biochemist, I'm a philosopher, you know, first and foremost I'm a theorist of philosopher, basically.
Yeah.
But I tap into the chemical part of it, more so via foods and things like that. But then why wouldn't I also want to tap into the emotional aspect? So one of the things that I do share with parents is the cycle of the physical, the chemical, and the emotional. So if we look and I got this in the middle of the night, I kid you not, I went to bed, I asked the question, I said, okay, so if Steiner philosophy thinks that the first 7 years of a child's life is about the physical body, what comes afterwards? So I went to bed, I woke up in the middle of the night in a sweat, I picked up my pen and paper that I generally have sitting beside my bed. I switched on my little light and I started writing. And I just downloaded. And there's a chapter in the book. I think it might even be a chapter 10, or maybe it's in the Lying Lexicon in the Health Illusion in that book. But I go through it in a very sequenced way. So the first 7 years of life, 0 to 7, is about the physical body. So that's going to be the predominant body. Then from 7 to 14, we go into the chemical body. And then from 14 to 21, we go into the emotional body. And then it all starts again. From 21 to 28, we go into the physical body. And then from 28 into the 30s, we go into the chemical body. And then we go into the emotional body. So it would look like this. The physical body of the early child from 0 to 7, they are up and down and into everything. You know, you cannot keep them still. Then the next 7 years, when they hit the 7, and we know when that change is coming up because there's changes in the cranium, there's changes in their teeth, there's changes in their gait and their knees, from a cranial and a gait perspective. So we know from that 6 to 7, there's major shifts taking place in their body, that the hormones start to get triggered. Their world broadens and expands, so they start to ask the why questions, like, or the who questions. Who was the first person that ever died in the world? You know, where is the first tree? You know, all those really big, expansive questions. And then they're in there, that's when they start to go into their chemical body. So their world is changing. They realize they're independent and separate from the family, that they are an individual. And then in that chemical body, we've got the hit of the puberty coming on, and then from the 14 to the 21, they're in their emotional body. So the emotional body is the tussle between dependence and independence. You know, I want your money, but I want to make my own. I love you, but I don't want to be near you. I need you, but I hate you. You know, all those kinds of tussles that they have going through those emotional, what we call what society would call teenage years, which I think that the whole teenage years is actually a fabricated lie, actually. I think it's a whole lot of parents in that particular area of life that perhaps don't want to look at themselves emotionally, so they suppress what they need to express and the kid then expresses it for them. And then from 21 to 28, we go into our physical body again. So when you're 21, you're like, oh, my gosh, my body's getting slack. I need to go back to the gym. You know, I want to, you know, catch a mate, you know, because then from 28 into around the 35, to around 35, we're then back into our chemical body of reproduction and wanting to have children. And then we go from 35 into the 40s and we're like, oh my God, I'm having a midlife crisis. So we go into our emotional body again. And then from the 40s, it starts into the physical body again, which is, you know, I'm now going through menopause, you know, all those sorts of things. So when you start to see that the physical, the chemical, and the emotional, and what Dee Dee spoke about earlier on, it has a far reaching effect than what we think at a smaller impact of a subluxation. Actually, there is a much broader picture to what's going, you know, how these unforeseen and invisible forces help to really shape and guide our physical reality.
It's quite fascinating, Sarah. You're blowing my mind.
It's amazing. I mean, I could talk for hours with you. We haven't even scratched the surface.
I feel
yet, right?
The same way. What I would actually like to know, Sarah, because I kind of agree with what you say about the subluxation, and I know Sue Brown also wrote a paper on it, is where can we find out more about thinking about subluxations and health like this? We've got your two books. Is there anything else?
Which are The Vital Truth and The Health Illusion. Is it killing you?
Yeah. You know, Vital Mums is my website. We're actually rebranding at the moment to Vital Families, and that's going to have a lot more information once we get, and I probably shouldn't say this, my husband will probably go, you shouldn't say this now because we don't know when it's going to come out. But for instance, I'm meeting with a videographer this afternoon. So we're going to do some online courses where people can come and learn, both public and professional, to really take this whole understanding and opportunity that we have to a different level. So that's under Vital Families, and we look at that from, because our business, Vital Families or Vital Lifestyles, is providing vital tools for generational change in health. So, yes, we can have an impact on the child, but I actually want to have an impact on the child's grandchildren. So how can we start to plant those seeds when they're really young? How can we start to break those, what I call the family health recipe, you know, done that way because that's the way it's always been done, kind of mentality, and really create the opportunity for parents and grandparents and children as they grow older, so they're, you know, children to come. How do we create what I would call a health slider? How can people move between health professions via the three health approaches? Now, for years, there was only two health approaches. The health approach was the allopathic approach, and then there was the alternative health approach. And so when I went to write The Health Illusion, and I tapped on it earlier in my research back in, so 20 years ago when I started looking at vitalism and its understanding and underpinnings within the chiropractic profession, but how that actually is laid out into other areas of life, when I started to look, and my mission was to organize the world's health information into bite-sized pieces so people could understand it. And when I saw that there we have the allopathic health profession and my love of etymology, then I saw that pathic actually means remaining passive. So the allopathic health approach is about someone entering into a health approach that is predominantly where you remain passive. You go to someone to get something, to take something away. You're provided with a treatment, so we're creating an illusion for our mind. We're blindly following what someone else has said. So someone is deemed to be more intelligent and more important than what our own body is and our own knowledge of it. And then I saw that we have the alternative health approach where native, actually in etymology, means offering a choice. It doesn't mean natural and organic like most people say. It literally just means offering a choice. You're still given a treatment when we look at the alternative approach and all the different health professions that sit in that bucket of the alternative health approach, which is usually called complementary and alternative medicine. So the alternative to the medicine, for instance, you could get aspirin in an allopathic approach, but you'll get willow bark in alternative health approach, but you're still doing the same thing, you're still providing a treatment. Mm. And then when I started to break it down further, there are a whole lot of little pieces, like I said, it was the bite-sized pieces that I was interested in so that I could help the public understand more about what each health approach does. and that I actually found that there are a whole lot of pieces that didn't sit within the allopathic or the alternative health approach. So I created another one. And the one that I created is called the alternate. So there's allopathic, alternative, and the alternate, where nate means inborn. So, and there's a whole lot of different, you know, more vitalistic understanding, self-responsibility, adjustment, move the mind to center, different kind of bullet points under the alternate health approach. So there's these three governing health approaches, but there's a plethora of health professions, right? You know, there's tons and tons and tons, thousands of health professions, but there's only ever three health approaches. So we could go in and we could look at a particular health profession and go, okay, this, okay, we would put them in the alternate, i.e. chiropractic. This, okay, naturopathy, we would put that in the alternative. So we're looking at how do we get all of that information, you know, the family health recipe, the health illusion, the different health approaches, and how do we put it onto, to go back and answer your question, how do we put that onto online courses so that, that people can be empowered in their own life and accept this self-responsibility and be that health slider to move between what they want, when they want within their life. So I'm jazzed and excited about that. We've got, you know, direct services, we'll have events, and we've got food coming out too. So it's a massive undertaking, and it's, you know, it's big goals, but we're excited about doing it. It always just takes longer than what I think, right? These things do.
Yeah, it sounds massive. It sounds like it will actually change generations to come. So we'll definitely keep us posted too. We'd love to get on board.
Do you still send your newsletters out, Sarah?
Do you know what? I haven't for a while, and that's mainly because I've concentrated on the branding and the rebrand of Vital Mums to Vital Families. I still do my blogs, and on my Facebook page, on the Vital Mums Facebook page, I do post on there the parents' lesson. So when something has come up in a situation either in our family or in another community interaction that I've had, then I post a parents' lesson on there. But no, Liz, to answer your question, no, I haven't. I'm slack. I've got three kids who are home educating and writing books.
All right.
Great. Well,
it's been lovely having you on the podcast, Sarah. I think we can speak for hours and hours and hours, but we did promise our people that we usually speak for 20 to 30 minutes.
Well, we can speak to 20 to 30 hours with you.
I'm sure we could.
It's been great. I've loved sharing. And although we've only scratched the surface, I'm sure that your listeners will be able to glean something inspiring from it.
I'm sure they will too, and now they also know to follow you forward, so if they want to learn more as well with the platform that you guys are creating. Sounds very exciting.
Yeah, thanks, Lauren. Thank you.
And thank you to all of our lovely listeners for tuning into another fabulous Just Tick Chiropractic podcast. Please like us on Facebook. We're almost at our 1,000 likes, and please check us out on iTunes and Stitcher. Subscribe to us. And leave us a 5-star review. And in the meantime,
just keep digging along.